Hello and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada. Today is Friday, May 6th. Can you believe it's May already?
No.
I'm your co-host,
summer.
Carissa Thorpe, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hello.
And Alyssa Ray.
That's me.
So, it's Mother's Day this weekend. And on today's show, we have Adrian Nelson from Fur Bearer Defenders, and he's going to talk to us today a bit about what the election, which I'm sure you're all really excited about, right? The election that we had on Monday night.
That was an emotional roller coaster. Woo!
What that election and the results mean for animals in Canada, and it should be very enlightening. And then we also have Jeff Urton from the BCSPCA to talk to us about pets and rental housing and give us some tips on how to find housing, rental housing, when you have pets. And for landlords out there, let you know why it's a good idea to let tenants have pets. There are some things you might be surprised to learn.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing about that.
Allison, I think you have a book giveaway that you want to do.
Yes, we had The Animal's Messenger by Shiri Joshua to give away today on the show. We had Shiri on the show last week to speak about animal spirituality and the human-animal bond. It was a really interesting show, and if you want to hear the podcast on it, it is available on our website at animalvoices.org. And we are giving away one copy of her book called The Animal's Messenger, and we're just going to do the draw right now. And drum roll, please. While I draw the name here. So the winner of the book is Shauna Hamilton. Congratulations, Shauna. You are the winner of The Animal's Messenger, and I'll be in contact with you shortly to tell you how you can claim your book.
That's great. And do you have another book that you want to tell us about too?
Certainly do. I'm all about the books. I want to talk about the book Striking at the Roots, A Practical Guide to Animal Activism by Mark Hawthorne. I first read this book several years ago, just after it came out in 2007. And it's since then always stuck in my mind as a great handy resource for animal activists to use as a practical guide for activism. Mark Hawthorne is no stranger to activism himself. So not only does he speak from firsthand knowledge in this book, but what I really like about it is that he interviews and cites many different examples of effective activism and tips from animal activists all over, including several local activists here in Vancouver who I personally know and have worked with myself, including former Animal Voices radio host Carl Loskin. The book is divided into 11 different chapters, each one dedicated to a different method of activism. For example, chapter one is all about leafleting, also often known as one of the most effective methods of animal activism. Chapter two is about writing letters, opinion pieces, and articles. And chapter three writes about tabling for the animals. Each chapter gives examples of those active in these different fields of advocacy with stories and anecdotes about what does and doesn't work for them, and specific useful tips that any beginning or seasoned activist can take and use to his or her advantage. For example, in the chapter about leafleting, Mark starts by describing a typical leafleting experience by one of the world's most accomplished animal rights leafleters in the world, John Camp of the organization Vegan Outreach, an organization solely dedicated to producing and distributing animal rights literature. He goes on to describe how John got involved in leafleting and the value he finds in this form of activism for the animals. Reading the first-hand words of an expert in the field, you know you're getting the best information on the topic and information that you can trust and take with you on your endeavors. Mark goes on to give John's and another experienced leafleter's, Paul Shapiro's, specific advice on how to handle common concerns with leafleting, as well as tips for leafleting success. After reading through this chapter, I think that any animal advocate's potential concerns or worries about taking on this task will be dissuaded by this newfound information, and one can move forward in having a newfound sense of confidence in having read the advice from the masters. The rest of the book goes in the same format, and there certainly aren't many other single places of reference where an animal activist can go to find this type of bountiful source of information all in one place. The book is incredibly well researched, and I thank Mark, the author, for putting so much time and effort into creating a comprehensive guide where we can go to find everything we need to know on how to be effective animal activists, with specific information, advice, and instructions on how to take on these tasks from, as I said, animal activists all over, many of them very well known in the AR world. The book is very reader-friendly, and I recommend it to any animal advocate as a useful and engaging read. As a final note, I just want to read for you a few endorsements of this book by two very notable activists in the animal rights movement, from Ingrid Newkirk and Captain Paul Watson. Ingrid Newkirk, president of the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, says about the book, "Brilliant. If you want to make your life count, influence others, and save a few thousand lives, this book is your roadmap. Give it to everyone you know." And Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society says, "If you are serious about helping animals, then you should seriously read this book." And with that said, if you are now itching to get your hands on your own copy of this book, yes, they are available at Amazon at a very decent price, but also, guess what? We have yet another Animal Voices giveaway where you can win your own personal autographed copy by the author. We are giving away one signed copy of this book to a lucky listener. All you have to do to enter the draw is go to the Discussions tab of our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and submit your entry there. You must not have won anything from us in the past year. And something different here, this time anyone in North America can enter to win this book, as it will be mailed to you. So you don't have to pick it up from the radio station. And if you're not on Facebook, you can also email your entries to radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. The deadline for entries is May 20th at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and we will be drawing the winner on our May 20th show in 2 weeks at noon. So good luck.
And if people already have the book as well, there's a special event happening at Nice Shoes on May 21st from 2 to, I think it's 4:30 p.m., yeah. Where Mark will be signing books as well. So,
and we're having Mark on our show next week, which is why we're giving away a copy of this book and talking about it.
That's exciting.
So some things that have been going on this week. A vegan pie baked by Susan Asato won second place in the 2011 National Pie Championships in the U.S.
Wow.
Is that crazy?
That's awesome. What kind of pie did she make?
Let's see here. I'll just read you the little blurb here from Veg News. So she's from Elizo Vijo, California, and she took home a second place ribbon at the Pie Championships for her vegan blueberry cranberry pie with pecan streusel topping.
Oh, hello.
The picture is delicious.
The picture is delicious.
Yes. I hope they add that to the vegan stock
and
photo that we've been talking
too.
About. That's true. We should just look at our food, right? Is that a proper intake?
Yes.
And I just wanted to let everyone know that this month, did you guys know that it's International Respect for Chickens Month?
Yes, I did know that.
Of course.
It's one of those months you just have to know about. Everyone knows it's International Respect for Chickens Month.
I'm not too sure that everyone knows.
Kidding.
Okay.
I thought you were serious.
And I was a little bit worried that...
No, the facetiousness in my voice
Sometimes we do have a tendency to get caught up in our little bubble where we think
everyone cares
and thinks about animals all the time, as much as we do.
And you know, within like the last year, I have a vegan job now. I co-host on this radio show. All I do is bake vegan baked goods, and I'm surrounded by vegans everywhere, and it's crazy. Where was this like 6 years ago when I was thinking about going vegan and didn't have the support system?
Well, that's it. You got to make the commitment, and then the rest just kind of falls into place. You don't know what's going
to
happen when you make the commitment.
It's really great. And just one other thing here is, so Adrian from Furbearer Defenders is going to be on, and on their Facebook page, there is a little story from Yahoo News that a beaver dam contained an oil spill in Alberta. And I was thinking about this today. Do you think that that's sort of like a metaphor for Canadians, since the beaver is our national symbol? Does that mean, you know, we can save the environment? Or we should?
It means that the beavers are going to save the environment, not us.
Yeah, I don't...
To take it more literally.
Comment on that. I mean, that'd be nice. I don't know.
I just thought that was a cute little story.
It is.
All right.
It must be a pretty big beaver dam.
Yeah. Or a very small oil spill.
Or that. I don't think it is, though, that.
All right, Allison, do you have a PRA for us now?
Certainly do.
Accordion Noir, your favorite Squeezebox show, celebrates its move to Wednesday evenings from 10 to 11 p.m. The boys with the bellows, Accordion Noir co-hosts Rowan and Bruce, squeeze the sounds from every continent into the weirdest accordion show on Earth. And that's saying something. Accordion Noir, Wednesdays from 10 to 11 p.m. on CFRO Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, Vancouver. Or you can hear us anytime at accordionnoir.org.
And just a reminder to our listeners that Forks Over Knives, the film that we reviewed and talked about back in January when there was a free screening at the Vancouver Public Library, is going to be opening in Vancouver on May 20th, which is really exciting. It's going to be opening in Vancouver and Toronto are the first two places in Canada, and then hopefully it'll be a wider release. And later in the show, at the end of the show, so keep listening, we will have passes to give away to that for the premiere, which is going to be on Tuesday, May 17th. And there might be a celebrity guest present as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so for our Animal Voices events, we have Friday, May the 6th, which is today, from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. There's going to be yet another vegan bake sale in town here in Vancouver. Earth Save and the Wake Project will be holding a vegan bake sale in front of the Teasel Pet Supplies store at 2949 Main Street at 14th Avenue in Vancouver. Two local nonprofit groups that benefit the animals, Earth Save Canada and the Wake Project, will be hosting a yummy vegan bake sale this afternoon. And I'm going to ask Carissa, when she's off the phone, we might expect from there. All proceeds will be split between these two charities. Earth Save Canada promotes a move towards a plant-based diet for compassionate health and environmental reasons. And the Wake Project is an awareness initiative that seeks to educate people about the importance of sharks, rays, and tunas to our fragile ocean ecosystem. On Saturday, May the 7th, tomorrow, all day long, will be the very first Vegan T-Shirt Day. Vegan T-Shirt Day is a mass advocacy project for animals, people, and the planet initiated by animal ethologist and author Jonathan Balcombe, who we've had here on the show before. You know those critical mass events where bicyclists take to the streets to remind motorists that they don't own the road? Well, it's time that we animal advocates launched a similar effort. So Jonathan has declared the first Saturday of every month to be Vegan T-Shirt Day, and the first one is tomorrow. So tomorrow, wear a t-shirt with the word vegan on it. My favorite shirt that I want to wear is from the organization Mercy for Animals, which says, "Go vegan and no one dies." That's one of my overall favorite vegan shirts. Do you guys have any?
I really like that slogan.
Yeah. Any favorites of your own that you might be wearing?
I think I just have buttons. I have shirts that say vegan, other things. Herbivore.
Vegan button day. Maybe, if you don't have a t-shirt.
Maybe you can make a t-shirt that's all vegan buttons.
Yeah, wear vegan.
Great idea. Just put all your buttons on there. So on Saturday, May the 21st, from 2 to 5 p.m., there will be a book signing event, as Carissa mentioned, by animal activist author Mark Hawthorne, hosted by Nice Shoes at the Nice Shoes store at 3568 Fraser Street in Vancouver. Mark Hawthorne, author of the book Striking at the Roots, will be signing his book at the Nice Shoes store. Mark Hawthorne works and volunteers with several nonprofit organizations, including the Animal Legal Defense Fund, for which he writes the Animals Advocate newsletter, the Food Empowerment Project, and Save a Bunny, which works with animal shelters in the San Francisco Bay Area to find permanent homes for rabbits. You'll also have the opportunity to meet and greet Lauren Ornelas, founder of the Food Empowerment Project, prior to her talk later that evening about food justice. We'll get to taste lovely sweet treats by Sprout Vegan Bakery, and we'll also be having Mark on our show next week, as I mentioned. On Saturday, May the 21st, later that evening from 7 till 9 p.m., Liberation BC is hosting a talk by Lauren Ornelas of the Food Empowerment Project at the Vancouver Central Library at 350 West Georgia Street in Vancouver. Lauren Ornelas, founder and director of the Food Empowerment Project, will be discussing how we can use our food choices to create a more just world. Learn about food deserts, the exploitation of workers and animals, environmental racism, and many other important issues from an expert in the field of ethical eating. The cost for this is free. There's no RSVP required as well. You just show up. If you want to find out more about what the Food Empowerment Project does, you can visit their website at foodispower.org. And we'll be having Lauren on the show as well to talk more about her work on May 20th. And very quickly, while we have some time, what sweet treats can we expect at the vegan bake sale today, Carissa?
Someone's bringing an apple pie, which I'm looking forward to. And then last night I stayed up baking most of the night, making some tofu chocolate chip cookies. And I've got pink lemonade cupcakes and then some peanut butter fudge that I think the point of it is that it's going to fall apart. So I'm not sure how we're going
to
sell that.
That's the point of the fudge? The point isn't to eat it?
Well, the point is to eat it, but I do think that it said in the recipe that it makes 2 cups worth of crumbly fudge. So
wow.
That should be interesting to see how
just
we dole that out.
Just shovel it straight in my mouth, okay?
That would make me not want to make that fudge if I read that.
Well, I didn't read it until the very end. I had already made it and was like, oh.
So it sounds good. If you have an animal or vegetarian-related event coming up that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver. I also want to encourage you to check out the local animal rights events calendar by the group Saving Animals, which gives a good list of upcoming events in Vancouver, some of which we have mentioned here. The calendar is available at http://vancouvercalendar.savinganimals.ca.
All right, we have on the line with us now Adrian Nelson from Fur Bearer Defenders, and he's going to join us in a discussion now about what the post-election world looks like in Canada for animals. Adrian, are you there?
I am indeed.
Hey, right. Adrian.
Hi, ladies.
Okay, so I think it's safe to say that we're pretty much all a little bit upset about the election results, that the Conservatives do have a majority now. And I'm just wondering, how much power is now against animal welfare, would you say, Adrian?
I would say a lot more. Before, we were getting a lot of response from, you know, obviously the Green Party and the NDP mm-hmm. Party, which was nice to see. But now that we're in a majority government, we're going to see a lot more of, you know, the shenanigans that go on with the Conservative Party, and I think this is going to be quite detrimental towards the cause.
Okay, and what does having the NDP as the official opposition mean in terms of keeping the Conservative self-interest in check? Do you think that it's better than maybe having the Liberals as the official opposition or having so many seats that they do?
I think it's a nice shift of power for sure, in the fact that they are a little more open to some of these ideas. Unfortunately, I think they're going to have less power now, being that we are in a majority government. Even though they hold more seats, they really can't overturn anything because the Conservatives really do have complete control of the power here. I think another interesting point, too, is sort of, and this I think will play out in the next couple of months, will be the shift in focus for the NDP. A lot of their seats that they gained were out of Quebec. I think they gained almost about 50-some-odd percent of their seats out of Quebec.
Wow.
So it'll be interesting to see if there's a shift of focus towards more East Coast campaigns. And frankly, Quebec is a very large fur-producing area. A lot of the garment industries and stuff out of Montreal, and fur is quite common there. So.
And they also don't have... Do they even have animal welfare laws? I know that they don't have anything against like puppy mills or anything like that, and that seems to be where... Is it correct that that's sort of a central location that puppy mills exist in Canada?
From what I've heard, yeah, we don't deal a lot with puppy mills here at Fur Bearers. But yeah, I have heard that there is a significant increase in that area for them.
Okay. And I read on the Fur Bearer Defenders blog in the lead up to the election that all of the bills that were before the House became void with this election. So can you sort of tell us a bit more about that? And are we starting at ground zero again here?
We are and we aren't. You know, I don't want people to get too disappointed here because, yes, when we went into a new election, everything that was tabled as a bill already is scrapped. Now, that doesn't mean that the bills have to be redone or anything like that. They just have to be reintroduced back into the House. Mm-hmm. So once a bill's brought forward, it's usually easy to get it brought forward again. Now, when we drafted Bill 618 with MP Bill 6A, now, unfortunately, Bill 6A didn't run again this year. He's retired.
Oh, okay.
So he won't be pushing that bill forward, but we had a lot of MPs that were in support of that bill, and we're quite positive that more are going to come forward and support that bill to ban dog and cat fur here in Canada.
That's great. So does it happen a lot that there's a bill that's put forward and it... based on sort of the lottery system of when it comes up that you end up having to go through this process a lot where you have to reintroduce it when there's a new election?
Yes, well, every bill is scrapped. Mm-hmm. It's not just ours. It's,
yeah.
You know, every bill out there. So this is quite a common thing to have happen. And sometimes this can work in our favor. Sometimes, you know, a new MP that's a little higher in seniority or gets a better draw in the lottery system will pick up this bill, and it could move forward through the House a little faster. Now, being that the Conservatives are in a majority government, once it does move through, it's going to be a lot harder to get this bill passed. The Conservatives, well, Stephen Harper, let's put it this way, Stephen Harper runs the Conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, I don't mean he's just in charge. I mean, this is one man that's really taking over control of our entire country. Generally, MPs are allowed, you know, they say they're allowed to vote the way they want to vote. And what ends up happening is if there's a controversial subject that they don't want to put a vote on, they don't want to vote along the party lines, they'll simply skip out on that vote. It's kind of a cheap way for them to get out and say, you know, I didn't vote for this, you know, it wasn't in my power, and they don't have to cross over that party line and say, no, I don't believe what our party's doing. Stephen Harper is notorious for doing what's called a whip vote. And basically what he does is he says, you all are going to vote on this day, you're going to be there, and you're going to vote this way. So you really have one man controlling everything right now, which can be a kind of a dangerous thing.
All right. Well, that sounds not so great. What do you guys think about that?
Sounds pretty manipulative to me.
Yeah, definitely. So did you guys... No, I don't know if you know this either, Adrian, that Elizabeth May, who was just elected as the first Green MP mm-hmm. in the election, that she had the highest voter turnout.
Oh, that's wonderful.
In the Saanich Gulf Islands, it was 75.1% of eligible voters went out and voted.
And, you know, I think that if there's any shining light to this election, that is really it, is her gaining that seat. And I think it does so much for voters out there. You know, I wonder how many voters voted NDP or voted Liberal because they just didn't want Conservatives in,
right.
And they didn't want to vote Green. You know, they split their vote to mm-hmm. who they thought would win rather than who showed their true values.
Perhaps this sort of shows people who do support the Greens that next year they might go with what their values lie in rather than for the strategic voting, and that... You know, it brings hope, I think, for the future. You know, one seat is a start to what may come in future years.
I myself vote Green, and I was kind of thinking, should I vote a different way? And then I live in Squamish, so I looked at what the other constituencies were and looked at how the votes are going to fall, and I was like, my one vote isn't going to help either the Liberals or the NDP to win over a Conservative, so I might as well just vote Green, and then they get the federal funding for my vote, right? So that was mm-hmm. that was sort of my reasoning. And actually, the candidate in my riding sent out an email that sort of said along the same lines a couple of days before the election so that people would realize that. So I do think that that is a very valid point, Allison. And do you think that people are going to, because the Green Party is the only party that, as we've been discussing, has animal welfare and animal rights in their platform, do you think that will raise awareness now that there is a Green MP and people will sort of, she can participate in the debates next time and things like that?
I would hope so. You know, it's going to be tough. I think she's got so many campaigns that are coming out that nobody else wants to touch, environmental-wise and animal-wise and everything else, that she is going to have her plate full. But I really do hope that we're going to see more of these animal-related causes coming forward in the House, at least brought forward for discussion.
Yeah, definitely. And so do you think that the answer in the future might be for more animal rights advocates to run for office?
Well, we have the new animal party now, right?
Yeah, but that,
it's
that's
a start.
It is, but
baby steps.
I worry about sort of putting your vote into something that is that small, you know, versus where now we've seen the Greens get elected, right?
Right, right. I'm just saying, you know, it's small now. Yeah. There's the Party for Animals also in the Netherlands, and they're making some strides there, right? So,
oh, I think you were telling me about that, and they joined forces with another group to make, or somebody told me that they joined forces with another group to make sort of a coalition. I think it was Brian Vincent was telling me about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
Yep. It's, I think, important to remember, too, that, you know, not that long ago, the NDP were a very small party that nobody thought would survive. You know, look where they are today. And, you know, people said that about the Greens, and now they've got a seat. And, you know, so things do change. It's just, you know, people have to cast their vote where they truly believe.
Mm-hmm. And I think we all need to do our part, too, to focus on electoral reform and get rid of the first-past-the-post system and have more representative voting system.
Yeah, because I think Stephen Harper only had, like, conservatives only had 39% of the vote overall in the nation, but they have 56% of the seats. Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just wondering, how do we go about the electoral reform, though? Is that anything that we can even hope for with Stephen Harper with a majority government right now?
Well, I know we had that referendum provincially, what was that, a couple of years ago? STP.
Yeah.
Federally, I don't know. I mean, there's fairvote.ca is a good place to look into it. There's petitions there and information about getting that going. I don't know.
I will definitely check that out, because that's something that's been heavy on my mind this week, thinking about it. Like, this isn't what people wanted, and people were shocked and didn't expect this, and people are thinking, you know, that's not really how I voted, and I'm not being represented the way that I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And I'm just, I don't know enough, I guess, about how to push things like that through, like if that would be a bill or what it would be that would
I know there's right now a referendum in the UK about proportional representation, and it's getting a lot of press there, so I don't know, I guess we have to look to them.
They are usually really far ahead of us, right? So maybe maybe that'll help us, and, you know, the Queen is our sovereign or whatever.
It's coming, it's coming. It's just a matter of when, and we all gotta do our bit.
Adrian, I'm wondering if you have some positive steps that you can share with us that everyone can sort of take in the face of what the election result was.
Yeah, I think one of the most positive things that we can all look at is this is a really fresh start for all of us. You know, we've got new MPs that are coming into office, a lot that have never been in there before. And I think this is a great opportunity for people to go out and to talk to their MPs about what's really on their minds. Get in there early, talk with them before they've committed to certain bills or to certain causes. Let them know what's important to you and that you want them to represent you. You know, they got elected in. Mm-hmm. Now it's their turn to do their job.
Do you guys think that's something that you can still do, even though, like, for me, a conservative was elected in my riding, but I voted Green. Is that still all right? Like, I don't know. I feel
They're your representative.
Yep.
You know, it's up to you to go in there and express the way you feel.
Of course.
Now, they may flat out, you know, turn you down, but, you know, at least then you know where they stand on things. And if they get enough people pushing them for something specific, you know, they're going to be kind of forced to look into it, at least, if they want to get elected again.
So what do you think the odds are that there are MPs out there who maybe are even animal rights supporters, but who are maybe just under the radar right now because there are so many new faces?
That's a tough call. I'd have to look into more of the new people there and see. You know, I think we're seeing a lot more people getting involved with the movement, and you know, I would hope that that's transposing into the political realm as well. But without knowing the actual candidates, I couldn't say for sure.
And I'm just wondering if you guys think that now we're not going to have an election for 4 years. Do you think that there is a bit of a good side to that, in that we're stuck this way for 4 years, and in that time, people are going to start to really wake up to... Yeah, people are going to really wake up to...
Have they ever gotten fed up before?
Well, I think that Stephen Harper has so much more power now that I think he's going to exercise it, and I think that
people
might
see his true colors.
That's what I'm... Do you guys think that that might be the case?
What I hope the 4 years does is that it allows time for the interest in animal issues, perhaps, to gain momentum, so that perhaps next time you're going to be looking at more than one seat of Greens being elected.
Because I think it was something like we've had 5 elections in 9 years since he came, I think he's called 5 elections in 9 years or something like that is what I heard. So that's a lot. So maybe the stability of knowing exactly when the next election date is. I know for me, I'm thinking about possibly running in the next election now that I know that I would have 4 years to sort of prepare for it. Because I don't speak enough French, I don't think, and things like
Neither
that.
Neither does Stephen Harper.
Really? Is that true or that's a joke?
It's true. It's true. He's an embarrassment.
All right. So what do you guys think about the animal welfare stance of the Conservatives in conjunction with the rising awareness? Do you think that's what's going to happen, is that people are going to sort of see how far off the Conservatives are, and from there it might help the movement?
Well, people already know... I keep bringing us back to the seal hunt, right? Yeah. People already know that the Conservatives are pro-seal hunt. They're the ones that are running the seal hunt. And people still voted for them. So I'm not sure about that. You know, you're always hearing in our kind of animal rights circles that the majority of Canadians are against the seal hunt. Mm-hmm. However, I guess the majority of... a lot of people didn't vote. Is it the people who are against the seal hunt, they didn't vote? Alyssa?
I don't know. Only 24% of people, registered voters, voted Conservative. So that's...
Okay, so there you go.
Including people
who
didn't vote,
because that kind of baffles me, thinking, how come, you know, they're being elected in, and what's the deal with them being allowed to host the seal hunt every year, when apparently most of our citizens, constituents of the country, are against it? I think if people cared enough, because there's a lot of apathy there, it seems, for sure. That's why people don't vote, right? It's not that it's not convenient. It's apathy. Mm. If people cared enough about the seals and other animal issues, but I'm citing seal hunt because it's a thing that's in everyone's face, and it's a pretty easy opinion to form as to whether you're for or against it. You know, there are some issues that people might know about, and we have spoken about them on our show, but most people have a fairly easily formed opinion about it. So I think if people care enough about it, if they start to really do care about these seals, because a lot of people are outraged about it, we need those outraged people to vote, then perhaps that might make a difference for the seals in the future. And as it stands, just even in the last few years, the number of seals that have been getting killed every year has been going down and down for different reasons. It's becoming a less popular industry among everyone.
I think the problem there is that probably wasn't necessarily a number one thing on people's minds, especially since...
Oh, yeah. There's
the
other
especially
issues,
since the Green Party is the only one that actually has any official stance on whether or not they
would
continue
that. They're the only ones that have an official animal welfare stance at all. They're the only ones that have a statement officially on animal welfare.
So no one
issues.
Would have been thinking like, oh, I wonder if I elect the NDP, they're going to stop the seal hunt, right? Like nobody
because
would
no
have
one mentioned it. That's why, and so it probably wasn't on people's minds exactly.
So I'm excited to see what'll happen, even just the debates with Elizabeth May in the future, where she will start to bring up these issues and the candidates will have to answer them, whether they're brought like I don't think they're being brought up in the debates right now, right? So
headlines, but at least
or it might make headlines because no one else is talking about it. It's going to be controversial
based on just the WISPA website that we were talking about last week, the statements from the parties where they had time to think about things and they still came out not very well thought out and not making much sense.
I think they spent a lot of time thinking about
it. Yeah, but they
the
still
issues.
Could have. I think that in a debate, that's going to really show through. So I think that's something to look forward to. Yeah. Sorry, Adrian, but we're all out of time now. But thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks, Adrian. I like talking to you. So you are listening to the Animal Voices show here on 102.7 FM, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And before I play a little PRE here, I wanted to say a special happy birthday to a friend of mine, Wade, who I'm currently chatting with. I told him to listen to the show. Happy birthday, Wade. It was his birthday yesterday. He turned big 4-6. And I hope you have had a great day yesterday and have an excellent year.
Heard. Mondays at noon, we go for an hour. We talk about culture, gender, race, class, and power. We're bringing sexy back under attack. Cause it's about time folks started taking some flack for promoting a culture where you must be a pessimist. If you want to speak your mind and say something feminist. But we know it's not true. From the truth, you can't run. Feminists simply have so much more fun. If the trash that you hear makes you angry or bored, check out the F word at feminisms.org.
You're listening to Animal Voices Radio on Co-op in Vancouver. And my name's Alyssa, and here's some little news tidbits for you. So this first bit of news I have here is not exactly new, but it's news related, and I thought maybe our listeners might be interested. In the wake of the announcement earlier this week of the murder of Osama bin Laden, terrorism and terrorists are back in the forefront of our consciousness. It's not surprising Mr. bin Laden was number one on the FBI 10 Most Wanted Terrorist list, or that the rest of the alleged terrorists have connections to either Al-Qaeda or Hezbollah. What is hard to miss when looking at the Most Wanted Terrorist list of the FBI, the remaining list now that Osama is off the list, allegedly, is the presence of Daniel.
Allegedly.
Well, I don't know. You know what?
They're going to show pictures.
I don't really believe a lot of stuff.
Anyway. Well, they've said that they won't show pictures because of the terrorism that it would incite.
Anyway, I don't know.
Go on.
I don't even know really why I brought this up because it's so.
I'm sure
like,
there's an animal aspect to it.
No, there isn't. Nope, that's it.
All right. Well, thanks, Alyssa.
Well, actually, no, there is. Actually, now that I look at it again, there's an eco-terrorist or an animal liberationist on that list. Everyone else on the list is, like I said, Al-Qaeda or Hezbollah, supposedly related, except for Daniel Andreas San Diego. He's the first American eco-terrorist, quote-unquote, added to the list. He was added 2 years ago on charges related to two bombings of office buildings that are connected to the Huntington Life Sciences, which is Europe's largest animal testing laboratory. Though the FBI considers him armed and dangerous, notable is the fact that there were no injuries or deaths in these bombings. I'm assuming they happened at night when no one was around. And of course, you know, in no way am I meaning to, you know, condone the violence or property destruction or anything like that. I'm just, you know, trying to just pointing it out. It's interesting that he's on there. And I'm pointing out, I'd like to point out that revenge and violence can be pretty ugly business. Case in point, I found this little tidbit on ammoland.com, the shooting sports news source.
Is that a website that you peruse regularly, Alyssa?
Actually, no, it's not. I was just checking. I was just looking for animal rights news. I just Googled that, and it came up like right away. And so their little article at the bottom, it says, "Know thine enemy. Sportsmen, including hunters, trappers, sporting dog owners, should take notice of the seriousness of the threat to our traditions and the commitment of these radical groups to use deadly force to advance their cause." That sounds a little bit, I don't know, kind of a little bit scary. And now on to the royal family. More related to, you know, kind of news related this week, but it's more related to factory farming than animals directly. I was interested to learn that Prince Charles gave a speech in Washington this week denouncing the unsustainability of current industrial agricultural practices. He is quoted to have said they're no longer viable as they once appeared to be.
Prince Charles is quite an environmentalist compared to what you might think.
Yeah, that's, I guess, it was new to me. And so what the, I guess the news is he has been championing sustainable agriculture for many years, but this was his first major speech on the subject in the U.S. And yeah, I don't know how much sway he has or... You know, but I think it's important that the message gets out.
He's Prince Charles.
But in the States, I mean, here
we have... Oh, in the States, yeah.
You know, we're
none,
part of the Commonwealth,
pretty much.
I guess.
But, none, pretty much.
And he said, in some cases, we're pushing nature's life support system so far that they're struggling to cope with what we ask of them. If we do not work within nature's system, then nature cannot be the sustaining force she has been.
I think he's just another reputable voice that is adding to that message, so it certainly doesn't hurt.
Nope, not at all.
And especially right now when everybody's royal crazy.
Yeah.
Could really help.
I know he's a big fan of hunting foxes, and I'm sure he's not going to go vegan anytime soon, but anyway. And then I just have one final little tidbit here I found. If I have time, I don't really, but I'm just going to say, a 19-year-old in Ann Arbor, Michigan, purposefully ran over a family of ducklings with his Hummer after visiting McDonald's. He was arraigned on the charge of killing an animal, and bond was set for $5,000. That's the news.
And living immorally.
Wow, what a nice ending to our news.
I know, sorry, I just...
Wow, okay. So, we here on the Animal Voices radio show always try to stress the gravity and seriousness of deciding to adopt a companion animal and how it really is a life choice that you're making, as you're saying that you're taking responsibility for that animal for the entirety of their life, just like you would with a child. A huge consideration when making such a decision is that of housing. Where will you and your animal friend or friends live, for how long, and what happens when you move? Here on the line with us now is Jeff Urton, Animal Welfare Manager of the BCSPCA, to talk to us more about the issues and positive aspects of pets and rental housing. Hello, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show, Jeff.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Definitely.
Hey, Jeff.
So first of all, can you tell us what the statistics that the BCSPCA might have as to the number of pets who are surrendered every year because of housing issues?
Yeah, it's actually incredible, and we've been doing some more some recent research on this that shows that there are upwards of 2,500 dogs and cats that are surrendered to our shelters in our network throughout BC. To SPCA shelters alone, now we run 36 branches throughout the province, but of course there are other humane societies and animal rescue groups outside of our system that are dealing with additional pets in addition to what we do. But it is housing reasons are the number one reasons for pet surrender to our shelters in BC. It's astounding.
Okay, I would imagine that you guys, you probably have your hands quite full with all of that, so you probably don't have a lot of time, but is there any sort of a protocol that you are able to take when someone does come in to surrender a companion animal, such as, you know, offering advice or letting people know what their rights are surrounding housing and animals?
Yeah, that's a great question, and this is something that we have in our shelters. We have, you know, obviously we have people coming in every day to surrender their pets for a variety of reasons, and we're always trying to... educate where we can and try to really understand the reason that people are surrendering their pets to us so that we can try to prevent surrender, future surrender of animals, but also so that we might be able to, whether it's educating animal owners or giving them some resources to help prevent the surrender. So if you look at situations where people have some kind of housing reason, now it could be that their landlord has said they've got to get rid of a pet. It could be because they're moving and they can't find someplace for their pet. And we have some resources available to give to people so that we can let them know how they can make a case to their landlord or to a potential future landlord if they're seeking an apartment that pet owners are actually very, very good tenants. They're very responsible. They tend to be willing to pay more and stay longer in a suite than your average non-pet owning tenant. And so there's some education that we're able to do there, which probably helps us reduce the number of animals that are being surrendered to us for those reasons. but it's something that, you know, we really only have had these resources available to people for the last year or so, and so I'm really hoping that we'll see those numbers of animals coming into us for those reasons start to go down as people realize, as people become more familiar with and learn how to make a case to be an advocate for themselves as pet owners, to show their landlords that they they're good, responsible tenants, and that they should be allowed to keep their pets and their pets in their apartments.
Yeah. Can you tell us what rights, if any, people with animals who are looking for rental accommodations have, and particularly, as you mentioned, where the landlord says you have to get rid of your pet, what sort of rights do people have there?
Yeah, unfortunately, the rights aren't very strong.
Okay.
So it's absolutely the landlord's right to prevent you from getting a pet, and unless you have, you know, clearly stipulated in your rental tenancy agreement that it's that you have the right to get a pet. So anyone, even if you don't have a pet and you're signing a tenancy agreement, please try to do your best. If you're somebody, even if you don't have a pet now, but you're thinking about getting one, do your best to try to make sure that it's clearly indicated in that agreement that the landlord signs off on it being okay for you to have a pet. Now, the landlord can influence what kind of pet, how many pets, in that agreement. And as I'm sure most people know, most apartment buildings set limits on those too.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that it's really good to get down in writing, very clear in your agreement before you even take on the suite. And you know, I found looking around at some of these agreements, there's a lot of standardized agreements out there that are being passed around by landlord associations or by realtors, and a lot of those standardized agreements that are just given to people who, to, you know, new landlords looking to rent out their suite, a lot of them have a de facto no pets allowed policy in them. And so the landlord might not even really have a problem with pets, but they've just been given the standardized form to use. And so people need to stand up for themselves, and, you know, in a polite and accommodating kind of way, but say, you know, question their landlord. Is there a reason that you're concerned about me having pets? And then they can go to our toolkit, which they can find online on our website at sbca.bc.ca, and get some of the resources and information that they can use to let their landlords or potential landlords know that pet owners are responsible. They, like I said before, they tend to be willing to pay more for good, stable rental accommodations, and they tend to stay longer.
And if a tenancy agreement doesn't say anything about pets, does that mean that you don't need to get pre-approval for a companion animal if you adopt after the fact, or is that grounds to sort of evict you even if it's not in there?
It could be. I'm not entirely sure about all the legalities, but it's definitely in your best interest to make sure you're totally upfront about it, and that your rental agreement does very clearly say that it is acceptable for you to have a pet. It's you know, covering yourself off in case you ever end up wanting to get one, and it's just a smart, savvy thing to do. So the message here, I think, really is to be proactive, even if you don't have a pet yet but you're thinking about getting one. Be proactive and make sure that your landlord is signed off on that in your agreement before you even choose to go out and get one.
I have a question for you, Jeff.
Sure thing.
I think my rental agreement says that I'm not allowed to have pets, but I have a cat. And but the cat,
been there.
The cat's been around though for like, there's been different cats actually. It's been like, it's been
don't tell them.
It's been a couple of years. I'm hoping they're not listening right now. But they know. They've been in the house. They've seen the cat. I just like, I'm scared of. I don't know. Maybe I should write them a letter or something and just say, look, this is
your
the way it is.
Question is, what might happen?
I don't know. What should I do?
You know, that's a really good question. And I think that's a lot of it comes down to your relationship with them already. Mm-hmm. If you have a good relationship already, they know you have the pet. My suggestion would be, you know, to just approach them casually. I wouldn't even do it formally, like in writing, right from the get-go. You know, just next time they're over, have a chat with them about it and ask if... if you know, maybe you could make it official and have an amendment added to your rental agreement that says that pets are okay. And there's a couple of good reasons for that. First of all, it you know, makes it transparent out in the open and everything, and it prevents you from dealing with the problem down the road. But also, you know, assuming that you're not going to stay in that apartment or house forever, it maybe sets the scene for the landlord to make sure that the accommodation stays pet friendly once you've moved out.
Definitely.
So there's a bit of a movement there that I think we all can be a part of when we're actually trying to educate landlords and let them know that pet owners are good tenants and crack open this pool of pet-friendly accommodations throughout the province.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah. Thanks for the advice.
Yeah.
I've definitely noticed a weird sort of thing, how you're saying that a lot of tenancy agreements just say no pets in them. If you look on Craigslist, a lot of times it'll say no pets, and then it'll say small cat okay, or small dog maybe okay, or I could negotiate for, like, a cat and a dog maybe.
People don't want big dogs.
Yeah, I think maybe it is to do with the reservations that landlords have about potential damage from animals. Can you just tell us what advice is in the toolkit for landlords with regards to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think one of the things that landlords can do who are, you know, they might not be pet people themselves, and they might be a little bit concerned about there being damage or soiling in the apartment due to having pets there. And if landlords are concerned about that, it's their right to charge a pet damage deposit. So just like your regular damage deposit, which could be up to 50% of your month's rent, that most people get charged at the beginning of their tenancy, that the landlord can ask for an additional pet damage deposit for, again, up to 50% of the a month's rent. Now, so there might be some pet owners out there who are saying, "Well, I can't afford that," or now I'm going to be handing a full month's rent over to the landlord in advance that I'm not going to see back again until I move out of the apartment, which, who knows, that could be 5 years from now. And that's true, that there's definitely a financial cost that comes along with that.
That's what you have for having a pet. There are costs associated with
absolutely.
That, and you know that as a responsible pet owner.
Absolutely. And if it means that it makes the landlord comfortable with letting you have a pet, then it's worthwhile. So it's something that landlords, I bet most landlords don't even know they're allowed to charge that. And so if you're dealing with a situation where you're looking for an apartment, you've answered an ad, and you've got a landlord who's maybe a little bit squeamish about whether or not to allow you and your pet, let them know. Say, look, I'm responsible. I'm a responsible pet owner. I don't anticipate my pet's going to cause any damage. But if it puts your mind at ease, you do have the right to charge me a pet deposit, pet damage deposit, I'd be perfectly happy to pay you that up front to make sure that we've covered off any potential damage that's done by the end of the suite. And they, frankly, I think with a lot of these people, with a lot of landlords, they'll just be impressed at you dealing with it in a professional way and saying, look, I'm willing to pay more, or I'm willing to give you this deposit because I'm so confident that I'm going to keep your apartment in perfect condition that I'm going to get the money back. So it's definitely something that you can try.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Jeff. And just to let people know that I did post the link to the toolkit on our Animal Voices Vancouver Facebook page, and you can check that out there. And there's some info in there for prospective tenants, including things about the pet deposit maximum that they can be charged, and then some really interesting stuff about having a pet resume, all about your pet with references and certificates and a photo.
That's a good idea.
And then another thing it said in the toolkit was to have your pet with you when you go for sort of the final interview.
Have your pet charm the landlord.
Yeah. So thank you very much for that, Jeff. It was very informative.
You're welcome. Thanks for having you. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So earlier in the show, we told you about the upcoming Forks Over Knives movie premiere that's going to take place at Fifth Avenue Cinemas on Tuesday, May 14th. No, sorry, 17th. So if you are available that day and you're interested in going, we have 5 sets of double movie passes.
That's in Vancouver, by the way.
Yes.
Where we are.
So if you would like that, Allison, I can't see the phone number right now. Do you have the phone number for people to call?
The phone number is 604-684-8494.
And we will take the first five callers through, and we'll post the winners on our Facebook
page.
But
we're going to have some, we're going to give some out online too, right?
Yep. Oh, yes. If you want to tell people how, were we going to ask them a question or anything, or just draw names if you want to post on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver. So we're going to give away five passes, or 10 passes next week on the show. So if you want to go online to Animal Voices Vancouver on our Facebook page and
is
just
that double passes or
yeah, double passes,
they're double awesome. Passes.
You can take a friend.
Yay, but I'm not allowed to win.
But you've already seen the movie.
But it's so good. I want to bring someone who hasn't seen it, you see?
Yeah, definitely. So it's at 604-684-8494, and one of our lovely co-hosts here will be taking your call. You are listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM, CFRO in Vancouver, Canada. Next week on the show, we'll be having Mark Hawthorne, who is the author of the book Striking at the Roots, A Practical Guide to Animal Activism. And he will be talking about effective animal activism as well as issues concerning the exploitation of workers in the slaughterhouse and animal farming industry. And just as a reminder, we are giving away a copy of that book to anyone in North America who wants to win a copy. And all you have to do is go onto our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. There's a click on the discussion tab, and there's a thread there that's been started where all you have to do is, I've asked a skill testing question just to name one of your favorite methods of animal activism, and that'll be an entry for our draw. The deadlines for entries is May the 20th, and we'll be announcing the winner on our May 20th show. You can also email us your entry at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Don't forget, we have Twitter, Animal Voices YVR. We have our website, animalvoices.org, where you can look up podcasts of all of our past shows, and they can also be listened to on our Facebook page group, Animal Voices Vancouver. We thank you for supporting the show, and if you want to make us a donation, we're always willing to take those as well. Just go on to coopradio.org and click on Become a Member there, and you can actually just make are making a donation when you buy membership. Any donations, I think it's over $25, yeah. You get a tax receipt for, so it's a good deal. We have a song here, Carissa.
So this is Our House by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, because we were talking about living with animals, and there's a little bit of that in this song.
The fire, you place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire for hours and hours while I listen to you play your love songs all night long. La 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 la
be so hard. Now everything is easy 'cause of you.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
In the age of Fukushima, past the time of dead terrorists and royal weddings, underlying deadly storms and higher food prices, we continue our relentless carbon war against the atmosphere and the sea. In this Radio EcoShock program, five guests take us through the process. Almost the father of public health warnings on climate change, Harvard's Dr. Paul Epstein is our guest. Before the deadly tornadoes in the American South, he specifically warned of more violent weather. An advisor to governments, Dr. Epstein talks about climate impacts on the air we breathe, smog, and the one out of every 10 Americans suffering from asthma. Just for the horror, I'll toss in a few minutes from another climate and health talk, this time Dr. Tim Takaro.